Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. Happy holidays to you. I understand you had a wonderful Thanksgiving week and no travel, and I likewise
over
here.
Yeah, we were hunkered down in Michigan and just had a wonderful time with family.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, one of the things, I'm looking at all the reports of all the, you know, the busiest travel weekend of the year kind of thing, and the entire country basically got rain or snow or combinations pretty much on the busiest travel day of the year. And the news reports are saying, oh, that's a terrible failure. Our system's letting us down. We need, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and they're doing all these stories of people being stranded and flights canceled. And it's one disaster after another. And then like other parts of the airline industry is scrutinizing Boeing, right? They've had these failures of this one anti-stall or stall protection system. And now they're losing trust in, I say they, the worldwide aviation industry is losing trust in the FAA to provide the oversight that they've done for decades. And, you know, it's, and I'm thinking this is a, you know, great time of year. People are usually getting together and having a good time and learning things and all that good stuff. But we've got all this bad news all the time.
You know? It is. And the infrastructure, all the weak spots come out when you're loaded up like that. And we know about that during product development.
Oh, yeah.
Because we consciously try to induce failures, or we should. Not everybody does, but we should consciously induce failures, and then that should be celebrated.
It should. And that's my, and I think you got the drift when I was going with that, was that it's just because the Christmas tree lights don't, the string doesn't light up. I don't know how many times over the years that we pull out, you know, lights for the house or whatever, and then and it doesn't work. And then it's, but it's just part of the process. There's bulbs wear out and let's fix this. And, you know, at some point I'll probably get a bunch of LEDs that have a better life, knowing what we know these days. But you're exactly right. It's, and it comes, and for me, it turns out that years and years ago, I went to Dick Moss, who is the HP quality and reliability guy at corporate, and I asked him, you know, I'm setting up this test, and I don't feel comfortable setting up a test that has minimum sample size and is designed not to fail, right? If we have a failure, that's bad. And he said, well, it's economical. If you know, you know, the details about failure mechanisms and so on, it's a useful approach. But he said, well, what bothers you about it? He says, we don't learn anything, right? We confirm what we think we already know, but we don't actually learn something. And also is that there's this pressure to pass, right? And it says, that's not why we're doing the test. It's like what you said is in product development, we're trying to expose weaknesses, like the airlines experienced this last holiday.
I have a quote and a story that comes to mind. So let me just share that with you. And the quote is from years ago when Thomas Edison was developing the light bulb. He was talking to reporters and they were like questioning him, why haven't you just finished this? Where's the light bulb? And he's bristling and he's saying, I haven't failed. I know 10,000 ways that don't work.
That's right.
And so he's, but the whole point of that is he learned as he went along. They were thinking he had failed and he didn't think he had failed. He was discovering failures and he really understood that process that we're talking about. And then let me share a short story. One of my first jobs at GM was managing door testing. It's back in the early 80s. And we passed, these were reliability tests, quote, reliability, unquote, tests, that had a few samples and we'd test a bogey and pass. And then the parts would be released and everything was fine, except we had terrible door warranty. Doors failed all the times in the field, but they didn't fail in the lab. And so we thought we were doing our job, and it bothered me tremendously at that point. And I, that sort of was one of the triggers to me getting into a reliability field, because I learned about reliability testing, but I felt very uncomfortable with passing right. reliability tests when you didn't learn anything. You didn't discover if you were like really close to failure, or you didn't discover if your tests didn't represent the actual field usage. Nothing was learned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we had terrible warranty.
Well, yeah. And that's, I mean, and you had the data that, you know, revealed it to you. Imagine if you're sending out a product and you believe you're testing it so it'll last for 10 years and it'll take you 6 years to find out you were horribly wrong.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
And that's, I think, very common. There's so many pressures on getting a product out, right? And reliability testing is often expensive and time consuming, and it's often late in the program. I shouldn't say often. In my experience, it's been often late in the program that we walk in the door and say, well, you know, this won't really work. It, you know, it's like the Dilbert cartoon. Our product mm-hmm. explodes and sends shards of metal through the whole room, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And it's not supposed to. But it's the issue is, it starts with that you should set up yourself. It's not always a halt test, but any experiment that you're doing, you should design it so you learn something. But I think the bigger issue, to me anyway, is the attitude that a failure is bad.
Yeah, that attitude is, and I remember it in my GM days early on, and one of my colleagues, a really good friend and colleague, Larry Edson, was working closely with Greg Hobbs mm-hmm. and bringing HALT into GM. And Larry and I would go to management and we would push really hard the subject of failures are good.
Right.
That we need to fail. We didn't use this phrase, but it comes to me now.
Well, you should have.
Plan to fail.
Plan to fail.
Yeah, plan to fail. And design everything around failure. And we pushed really hard on that. But we pushed up against the attitude, the culture, if I could use that word, mm-hmm. That failure's bad.
That's right.
And shoot the messenger. God forbid anybody actually has a failure, because that means that you personally have failed.
Oh, yeah. I was at a conference, probably at Rams conference. A colleague came up and said, you know, the issue is that, and I think I told the story of the design engineer that would just sigh and look at me like, oh my God, he's here again. You know, what else is wrong? Right. And he said, you know, the issue is that you in the reliability space are looking at the world from the failure space. We're looking for what will fail or what could fail or what's potential for failure, what could go wrong. You know, you've run into this with FMEAs. People have to be convinced that it's safe to expose all the weaknesses, right? Especially yeah. if the designer, the lead designer is in the room, because we're calling his baby ugly. And some people take a lot of offense when somebody says, well, you could fail this way, or could fail this way, could fail. And so the reliability folks tend to look at the world from a view of, well, what could go wrong, right? It's a relatively negative view when you think of it in the larger sense of things. Whereas mm-hmm. the design engineer and management teams are looking at it going, when this product is successful, we make money, we go to production. When it works, we're good. They're looking at it from sitting down into the design going, I have all these constraints, I have this budget and these kinds of components, and I need to put them together so it works, right?
Yeah, I wonder if this is a flaw somewhere in project management. In other words, project management says we do step one, step two, step three, and we have different gates and we have to achieve certain things by those steps. And does project management guide you towards failure? Probably not. It guides you towards success.
You know, I've seen some project managers, they plan for success and and they have the attitude that if you have a contingency plan or a backup plan, that's a mission of failure. And they don't want to do that. They have a tight timeline. They're going to get these milestones, and damn it, we're going to succeed.
Yeah, we're trying to cut time out of the product development process everywhere.
Right.
And so failures just extends the product development process.
Right. Whereas I found there are some project managers that understand that we have to learn as we go. We have to expose weaknesses in order to make a better product, because they and talking to them is they've been burned in the past. They're a week out from launch and they discover a fatal flaw in the product and they can't launch and they have to redesign it. And, you know, in hindsight, they go, you know, that was there, but we had blinders on. We did not want to hear it or see it. And that's wrong. If something is there that we can't ship the product, we have to find it. And then they learn that, you know, adding stress and pushing products to failure, but more importantly, listening to people say, hey, this isn't right. They have to be willing to hear that and do take action on it, because it's already there, right? It's going to happen. If it's the product has got a flaw in it, it's there.
It's going to present at some point.
That's right. And you have to be willing to hear that. If my boss doesn't want to hear about product failures, I won't tell him about product failures.
Right? Yes.
It's kind of the attitude. And
so reliability engineers, I think, have a job to educate their management on the value of failures. That should be part of their mission in life. Is, you know, you get a new manager, set them down, say, oh, you know, give him a little talk.
Yeah. You don't break his pencil and say, this is good, you know,
right. Kind of thing.
It's not that kind of, but it's the discussion about, and I like the way you phrased it with your management teams, you know, plan for failure, or failure is good. It's three sentences, small words, even managers can understand it.
Yes. And it's important to know, and I think this is part of the message, it's important to know your margin, your design margin, your safety margin, how close you are to failing, because without that knowledge, you need that knowledge to control variation, you need that knowledge for your plant control processes, and to know where you are in the field, and there's just so much value in understanding safety margins and design margins.
You know, it's an interesting discussion, especially with an invention of some sort, some new material or new product or whatever. And I'm sure you've heard the story of the 777 was the first composite wing that Boeing was putting together. It's a new technology for a wing structure, right? And building a wing and flexing it to its fracture point is the standard process in the airline industry, is a way to do exactly that, test the margin. They only do it on one wing, so it doesn't really go after variability much, but they get an idea, where's their estimates or assumptions correct or not? And so for this new wing, there was enough uncertainty that designers are loath to have to redesign it, right? If there's uncertainty, they add margin, they make it beefier, they go to the worst case of their assumptions, for example. Henry Petrosky, author of Engineering History, essentially, he talks about most designers try to avoid failure. They design away from failure. And it's a good trait in a design team. But they need feedback. And I think that's what we're talking about, is that you flex that wing until it breaks. And is it match or not match your expectation? And there's like three scenarios, right? It matches the models perfectly, it confirms our assumptions, you know, we've made a lot of good decisions, and it's a good design process, and thus we got a good product. Especially if it fails the way you expect it to, because if it doesn't, then you have to learn something, right?
I'm very uncomfortable today with what I know on a product development process that doesn't bake in failure. In other words, it doesn't encourage and bring about failure, so you know where you are.
That's right.
But I have thought about this, which is the in a fast-to-market environment, which we are, the only way you can generate failures and not extend the product development time is through acceleration. And there's this whole different body of knowledge on acceleration. But if you do acceleration well, if you, in other words, if you can get accelerated life testing, and if you understand modeling, and you get the stress models, damage models mm-hmm. done properly, then you can accelerate meaningfully, and you can then, in the fast market, you can bring about failures and still have some sense for where you are. Yep. This is in addition to pure halt, where you're developing, you're just pushing to failure without knowing what the impact is on reliability. And just the very short story on this is our tests in the door, going back to the door lab, slamming the doors used to take 90 days. That's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, these machines are opening and closing doors. Yeah. And in 90 days, you will have accomplished an equivalent 100,000-mile damage, supposedly. It's right. all calculated out. That's non-accelerated. Brought in really competent graduates from University of Maryland that modeled the damage on the seals, the damage on the sheet metal, and developed a test that would create the same damage in much shorter time. We're talking days instead of months. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Creating the same failures, but accelerating very highly. And then you could transition from slow open the door and close it to a much more extreme acceleration. But you have to understand the models. You have to understand the how things fail. And you have to want failures.
That's right. That's probably a long set of discussions to actually say we're going to test to failure and versus not. And that's, I think that's the gist of what we're talking about here. But it's one of those things where if we don't, and it's amazing to me. It's the same people that will push back on testing to failure and exposing weaknesses and finding margins and getting feedback to the design saying, hey, this failure mechanism wasn't anticipated, or this failure mechanism's happening right when you expect it. So, it's, you know, it's all good. That kind of feedback requires things failing or breaking and revealing themselves. Whereas this very same people that push back on that kind of approach, as soon as we have a field failure and a major customer calls, right, they're going to shut down the plant and spend a ton of money on failure analysis and then ask, why didn't we catch this?
Right, you know? Right, exactly. Ah! Exactly. And all of our podcasts that we've done in the past that talk about failure mechanisms and the importance of understanding mechanisms requires this environment where you push for failure. Because otherwise you're not learning what the mechanisms are. I mean, you can theoretically identify them, you know, sort of fatigue or corrosion, that type of thing. But when push comes to shove, seeing the failure is one of the best ways to understand what that mechanism is going to be.
That's right. Well, I did a webinar last month about standards and people using standards for testing. And oftentimes they are design, not all standards, but vast majority of international standards or reliability related standards or testing standards are do this, you know, dunk it in water 6 times, shake it off, and if it's still working, you're good.
Yeah.
Right. And if you fail that,
I should
then
say no.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it's, they often miss what realm of failure mechanisms are they actually looking for? Right. What's the mechanism they're evaluating?
Yeah.
And so that is that test relate to my materials and method of sealing, for example. If the original test was based on a polymer system and I'm using a metal system, is it even right. relevant?
Yeah. What assumptions went into that original test?
Right.
And where's the documentation of that? And it's usually not present.
Right. Vast majority of the standards say, you know, here's the procedure, do this, and then you're good. And you can claim that according to IEC 287.62 method 4, I passed.
Good enough.
And I was like, what does that really mean? But you see it all over and over and over again.
I know you do.
But it still comes back to this overall arching philosophy that we need to pass to move to the next stage. And I think Adam has this photo of him with some robotics company, and their mule got stopped by a tree at just the right time. And all these Marines and all the other folks, designers, are standing there looking all sad. And, oh, it broke. That's bad. And mm-hmm. he's ecstatic going,
yay.
Right. Because it was exactly the right diameter and strength to stop this thing cold. And we would have never found that in the lab. Right. Mm-hmm. This is why we do these things, is go find out what we don't know. And he talks about it as that's the joy of it. And I think he got that message across to this group, and they actually went out and look for ways to improve their product this way. But that's the, I think the gist of this is failures. I call it, failures are golden, right? If mm-hmm. something fails, we have an opportunity Fantastic. To learn something.
And let's take advantage of that opportunity. Let's make sure we use that information.
That's right. I just hope that Boeing's not going to try to learn something the next time I get on an airplane.
No. No, you want to learn during product development.
That's right. That's right.
That's let's the learn, time to
let's,
learn.
Let's learn earlier. But it's believe, though, that it's there's so many constraints, there's so many barriers, so many issues of it. And the attitude, the culture is, I think, the biggest one, right? There's all kinds of other ways to go about doing it. Even if you don't have many samples, you can learn more with one sample, forcing it to fail a dozen ways, than with a dozen samples that all pass. And it's clear.
This is really part of the heart and soul of the mission of reliability engineering, is to celebrate the failure. That should be in the passion that you bring to the job mm-hmm. in reliability. And I'd love to hear our stories from people. We've got some stories on this, but I bet listeners have some stories about failure and the pushback from their companies and how they've celebrated their success of failure.
Oh, that's a clever way to put it.
Yes, it is.
The success of failure. Yeah. Yeah. And please do head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can also find us on LinkedIn and through email. Go to the Ascendo site. You can certainly find ways to get in touch with us. And, you know, Carl, we're getting comments and questions probably 2 or 3 times a week now. Right. And I make an effort to always get an answer back to them or find somebody that can help them get those answers. And oftentimes those create the content the content for the show. So please do get a hold of us and join the conversation.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.